you for tuning in for another episode in the College of Arts and Letters series on mental health and well-being. Today, our guest is Dr. Neil Malik, Associate Professor, Department of Health Science and Human Ecology here on the campus of CSUSB, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor.
I'm Kelly Kluke here at Coyote Radio and Advertising, part of the Cal family. Education, that's why we're all here. Please describe your path.
I could say it wasn't very straightforward at all. A lot of my students think that since I'm a professor, that somehow I knew exactly what I wanted to do and knew exactly where I was headed. And that wasn't the case at all. I started off as a pre-medicine major at UC Irvine. So I grew up in Southern California and almost flunked out of school. I did well in high school, enough to get me into UC Irvine. And by my sophomore year, I got a letter in the mail. And that letter said, your GPA does not qualify you anymore to be one of our students. Good luck. You are now kicked out, essentially, of the university. I had to fight my way back in, claw my way back in, promise I would do better. Immediately changed my major because I thought I'm not built to be pre-med, apparently. So I switched to psychology because I took a class in high school, a psychology class as an elective. Loved that topic. Succeeded, graduated, did well in psychology. But after 2 solid years, you know, your junior and senior year of learning psychology and psychological concepts, I was done. I thought, I don't want to pursue psychology anymore. But I didn't know what else to do. So I worked for 2 years in payroll, which was not related to my degree at all, and realized while working in payroll, this is not my life either. So someone noticed I read textbooks for fun at night. Before I would go to bed, I would read nutrition textbooks and sort of bodybuilding textbooks, exercise, fitness textbooks, and I would read them and reread them. And they said, why don't you study that? And I said, well, it's because I flunked most of my undergrad science courses. I have to take chemistry. I failed that. I have to take anatomy. I'm sure I'll flunk that. They said, you're in a different place now. Why don't you try? So I went back to community college and started over, essentially.
What college?
Saddleback College in South Orange County. And actually, Irvine Valley College. I did take the second course in a series of chemistry courses there. And actually did well, surprisingly. I had great teachers. And it was at that moment, because of those teachers, that I decided I want to do that. And so I did study nutrition eventually. I went to school and got my master's degree in public health with sort of a major in health promotion and health education. And during my doctorate degree, because I loved getting my master's so much, I loved everything about it, I decided to get my doctorate in public health and pursue nutrition and sort of preventive care, which is disease prevention. So path was not linear at all. And it was during school, I just sort of reinforced, I had great professors, this is really what I want to do.
That is fantastic. I want to know, are you a healthy person?
I try to be. I wasn't always. And again, that sort of surprises a lot of my students. They think, well, you've always been active or you've always eaten well. No, actually, fast food was my one meal a day in college. I would skip breakfast, skip lunch, and go to my favorite place, Del Taco. Me and my brother, Del Taco, almost every night. When I was 19, I got diagnosed with a chronic disease. So I was in college, struggling to get through, making sure, you know, I stayed at UC Irvine and was diagnosed around that time as well. That changed how I viewed my own health. I like to say I'm healthy now because it's always in that back of my mind that it could flare up on me. So it's best if I stay healthy.
Here on campus, you hold a few positions at Cal State San Bernardino. Could you describe that for us?
Sure. I am an associate professor, so I teach. I spend quite a bit of my time instructing undergrad and graduate students in health science and human ecology, so nutrition and public health mostly. I'm also a researcher, so I do science-based research. I am director of the Master of Public Health program here at CSUSB. I help students with their research. I chair their theses committees. So I help students sort of get involved in research if that's what they want to do. I'm part of hiring committees and recently became a part of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Faculty Committee with the College of Natural Sciences.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's a lot.
It keeps me busy, but I love it.
What makes Cal State San Bernardino special for you?
The people. We're talking faculty, staff, and of course the students. I've taught at many institutions, and there's nothing like the people here at CSUSB. And I still remember, if I can share a story, I was still in school getting my doctoral degree. And remember, I knew I wanted to teach at that point, finally. I had made that decision. So I was thinking about graduating and getting a faculty position somewhere. I was going to school around the corner. I was at Loma Linda University. And I sent a snail mail letter, old-fashioned snail mail letter, to about a dozen campuses, UCs, CSUs. One of them was Cal State San Bernardino. And I sent a letter to the then department chair, Dr. Ted Coleman. He was one of only two that actually responded to me. He sent me an email and said, come on down, let's talk. Come on to my office. Department chairs are notoriously busy. He took an hour out of his day, invited me to his office, invited Dr. Dorothy Chen Maynard, who was here at the time, to come and meet me. He introduced me to her, to himself, talked about my plans and things, just was so welcoming. And I never forgot that. And so when the opportunity to teach here, to become faculty here came up, and Dr. Coleman and Dr. Chen were still here, it just seemed like this was going to be perfect. So faculty, the staff are amazing. They work so hard. And the students, it amazes me still how hard they work. They are balancing so much in their lives. So many of them work full-time, going to school, paying to go to school, earning a living to do that, finding time to take a full load of credits. I have so much respect for that, and it amazes me.
Your research includes adult and adolescent weight management, health behaviors among college students, and appetite hormones. And what led you to that track to be an expert in those fields?
I know it's quite diverse.
Interesting and at the same time overwhelming.
I would just say it wasn't very straightforward here either. So my research path, much like my education, was not straightforward. So when I was finishing my doctoral degree in public health, one of the requirements is we complete a dissertation, which is a large research project on our own. We collect our data, we analyze it. We have a faculty advisor who helps us with it. I had some ideas about what I wanted my research to be about. But my faculty advisor said, I see something in you. I think you're going to be a better fit for this other project I'm working on. So I trusted her and I said, sure, okay, let's do it. And she basically said, here's the topic, go do it. And she was right. My dissertation, my research topic in the beginning was weight management in adults and appetite of hormones and how what we eat might influence our appetite. And we're still learning how it affects us on a hormonal and cellular level. We still don't have the answers. So it was a fascinating project. Would do it again. Absolutely. I learned so much. I thought I would continue with that. When I came here to CSUSB, I met a colleague of mine during one of our new faculty orientation meetings. His name is Dr. Wagner Prado, and he's in kinesiology. His specialty was weight management, but for adolescents. So when he and I were talking, we had a lot of the same interests. Let's look at food and lifestyle and how it affects weight, body weight. But he said, let me tell you something. We have quite a bit of research on adults. Adolescents are where we need more research. He said about 1% of published studies look at adolescent health behaviors. The rest is adult. So we're missing a key component. He convinced me essentially to think about shifting to adolescent weight management. It didn't take much convincing because he's right. So little is published on this topic. So that's where sort of I got involved in adolescence and switched from adults to adolescents. When it came to health behavior of college students, it was the pandemic. When we shut down, I was concerned about where students are going to go for their health needs. I was guessing that quite a few of our students may rely on campus resources for their health needs. And I wanted to know, what are they doing when those resources may not be available? So that's how I got involved into that. And it just, it was the pandemic. I had this idea and I said, let's look at it.
Where did they go?
I wish I could tell you. I can't say, only because it hasn't been published yet. So stay tuned. We have our results. The journal is we're just waiting for final approval, and then I'd be happy to share.
With college students, the whole lifestyle is eating crappy, so.
I can relate. That was me.
Okay, moving ahead here, expanding on that research, how do those subjects affect mental health?
We know from a lot of previously published research that carrying extra weight over the long term, not eating a balanced diet, meaning really not consuming enough fruits and vegetables, can affect our mental health, not just our physical health. So we've probably heard about how diet, sleep, exercise affects us physically. But what we're learning about is if the gut is healthy, meaning we feed it good food, nutritious foods, it can actually influence the health of the brain. So certain foods we're learning actually can trigger anxiety and depression. We thought anxiety and depression starts in the brain and then may influence the gut, but it turns out it may be more of a reciprocal relationship between the two. So truly, diet and mental health are very much related. Physical activity, very much related to mental health. We've known that for a long time. But we're still learning more about how does diet truly connect to the brain, since it seems like the brain is so far away from where all the metabolism happens. But there is a connection there.
Are there certain foods at the top of the list that you can name for us
that might contribute to a damaged brain? Yes. What we're seeing are those processed foods, highly processed foods. So those that are high in simple sugars, not natural sugars, like added sugars. Your sodas, for example, would be a great example. The processed desserts. So your, unfortunately, candies, cakes, things like that. Those seem to cause the most damage potentially.
The usual suspects we all love.
Oh my goodness. I'm with you. Absolutely.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, you shared your expertise on stress management. Post-pandemic, this is what I would like to know. What information can you share for handling life or adjustments regarding what everybody went through?
It's really interesting that you asked this question, because I just happened to be listening to a fascinating book that talks about this very thing. And the authors of the book, they share the results from the Harvard Study of Adult Development, which is a very long-term study, spans decades, and they wanted to know what led to long, happy, healthy lives. And they talk about post-pandemic, pre-pandemic, and during the pandemic, what they found. And they talk about what they believe will help us sort of recover from the pandemic. And so what they found is that staying in touch with others, having close personal relationships, seems to be the best treatment. So loneliness, anxiety, and depression, they seem to go hand in hand. And what they found is, in order to adjust to life after the pandemic, reduce some of that built-up stress, reconnecting with others seems to be the most important thing, building deeper connections. And this is actually not all that new. When we look at prior studies before pandemic, for years and years, social support, you know, we humans are very social. Even the most introverted of us, we actually need others. And having that connection mitigates, reduces a lot of that stress.
Yeah, and a dog just won't cut it.
It helps. A dog absolutely helps. Pets do help, but we do miss the human connection. I've had colleagues who were in similar situations, and they're still feeling the effects of the pandemic, being at home and really not having that deeper connection that they're missing.
In your vast experience, What has been your favorite area to study, and why is that?
Something that, besides adolescent weight management, that I've become really passionate about is a fancy word, pedagogy, which is how to help students learn best. And that's become a passion of mine lately. So I've done quite a few, I've written quite a few sort of narrative articles where I haven't collected my own data, but I've looked at published research and sort of summarized what helps students learn the best. And so I've written a couple of articles on that. I could read, listen to, and talk about pedagogy all day. So that's become something of a passion of mine.
On a personal level, what are your hobbies and your outside interests?
I actually really appreciate this question because I feel like my students think of me probably as just a robot, maybe not really a human, because, you know, I talk about health and fitness, nutritious eating. I imagine that's what they think I do all the time. I just talk about the stuff and I go home and I sleep and I eat well and then I come back and teach and, you know, I'm just a robot. I've had students gasp in awe when I tell them, hey, I actually like certain foods that aren't so great for us. So they're always surprised by this. But one of my passions for sure is playing my guitars and music. I've always been sort of musically inclined. My parents did not want me to pursue a career in music because it wasn't sort of stable of a career. So I sort of shifted towards the sciences, but I still play my guitars in my garage. And I would say the second passion, this one may not surprise students, is being in my home gym, listening to that music and fitness. So I know I can't go a day without doing some form of activity. I'm just not the same unless I get that in. So I'd say music and being in my home gym working out.
Name some of your favorite artists in music.
This also surprises my students when this comes up. Rarely does this ever come up in class, but I actually like sort of the punk, harder rock music. I've been into that since before high school. Yes.
Social Distortion.
Exactly. Bad Religion. Yes.
Bad Religion. That was my next one.
Yes, absolutely. Pennywise and The Offspring. Yes. Those are my favorites.
Good taste.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
You had mentioned food. What is your favorite food and why?
So this is where pens and pencils will drop when I announce this in class, because students will ask me, you talk about all this healthy food. You must eat like this all the time. No, I'm human. And shocking as it may be, my favorite three foods, I have to mention three because it's hard to pinpoint just one. Pizza, donuts, French fries.
Holy cow.
Exactly. That's their reaction.
I didn't think that was going to be it.
No, nobody does. But that's the honest truth. Does it mean I eat them all the time? No, absolutely not. But if I had to say what my favorite foods were, it's those three, really.
Where are your favorite places for pizza, donuts, and fries?
Yeah. So with pizza, there's actually a family-owned little pizza shop near my house. It's one location. So I don't know if anybody would know it. I don't know if I should name drop or not. It's called Rubino's. So it's near where I live. That's my favorite, absolute favorite. Donuts, another. I actually don't like a lot of the chain donuts. I feel like, I don't know, they're missing something. Maybe it's love. I don't know. But another sort of mom and pop shop near my house, to me, makes the best donuts. And it's called JC Donuts. French fries. You know, it's been a long time since I've gone to a fast food restaurant and ordered French fries. When I used to consume fast food, yeah, Del Taco had some pretty good French fries. I would say probably restaurant fries at this point are some of my favorites, but I don't know if I could pick a restaurant.
Do you remember the days, Carl's Jr., when they had those brown, crispy, what were they, French fries?
Yeah, crinkle cut fries.
Yeah,
yes.
And they were so good.
Oh, yeah. I used to love those. It was a treat.
Finally, what advice do you have for students in the Department of Health Science and Human Ecology, and maybe more specifically ones that are graduating?
It's actually the same advice I would give any student. And this, for me, helped me find my path. So along with having great teachers, which inspired me to do that, I found that knowing your why, meaning why did you choose to come to school to work your job? What are some of the deeper reasons why you do things can go a long way. So it's a fancy way of saying finding your passion. What drives you? What motivates you beyond money? Go beyond the money. There needs to be some level of happiness or something that drives you. Because if you can find that, you can get through almost anything. If you just go back when things get hard and stressful, if you can just stop and ask, why am I doing this again? It can go a long way. And when students come up to me and they ask me, I don't know if I should go to grad school, like my undergrad students, they'll say, I don't know if I should go to grad school or not. I don't know if I should work. I tell them, explore grad schools, explore job descriptions. As you read through, say in grad school, the list of classes you're going to take, and you read the course descriptions for the classes in grad school that you think you might have to take, does it get you excited? Do you want to learn about those things? Does that class sound exciting? Does that program sound exciting? If not, either it's the wrong program or you're not ready. So that's sort of like finding that why and that passion. For jobs, look at the job description when they post it on the website. What are the duties? Does that sound exciting to you? Most of it, not all of it will sound exciting, but does it sound like something you want to do day in and day out? And if it does, it's probably the right fit. So for me, there are tough days being faculty, you know. There are days when we ask ourselves, why did I choose this? There's this, you know, it's stressful. We manage a lot of things. But when I stop and go, why did I get into this again? Oh yeah, it's because I want to change lives. It doesn't seem so bad now.
Where would you like to be with your work in 5-10 years?
One of my goals is to publish a book. I have an idea. I have a concept already. It's just a matter of finding the time to put it together. So that's one of my major goals within the next 5 years. Also professionally, to move up in rank, to be becoming a full professor. That's always been a goal of mine ever since I decided I wanted to be a faculty. Get a large grant. My colleague and I, Dr. Prado, he is like a brother to me now. He is, he's just helped me so much with getting our research together and on track. He and I have been applying for that National Institutes of Health, NIH grant. We've been trying, not successful yet, but I think we'll get there. So getting that large grant to fund a really amazing study is another goal.
We have been spending time with Dr. Neil Malik, Associate Professor, Department of Health Science and Human Ecology, and a lot more on the College of Arts and Letters series on mental health and well-being. And thank you so much.
Thank you. It was an honor.